is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome for our NBA preview 2019-2020 season, Dan Menigan from 92.3 The Fan joining us. Dan, welcome.
What's happening, guys? I'm glad you let me back.
Yeah, it's the third time, man.
I know.
You're getting close to the top.
For some reason, you guys like talking to me. I don't know why.
You're getting close to the top of the rankings here, so I don't know.
Him and Joe Harris, right?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Oh, that's pretty solid. Yeah. That's good company.
Well, Greg's got him. Greg White's got a few.
Oh, yeah, Greg White. That's right.
Greg's probably got the lead right now. But at any rate, all right, so we're going to dive into a bunch of different topics tonight. We're going to start out with Rookie of the Year. Talk a little bit about who we think is going to win the MVP. We're going to rank our top eight seeds in each conference and go through, talk about our conference finalists, and finally get down to who we think is going to be in the NBA Finals next June and who's going to win it. So, Jay, you're going to kind of
Whoa, you forgot the most important thing.
And some Cavs talk.
We're going to predict the Cavs record right there with the Finals record. I'm telling you right now.
I think it's going to be one and the same. At least I don't know who you guys have, but
question is going to be: will the Cavs' win record be higher or lower than what it takes to get into an R-rated movie?
Ooh, that's good. We're gonna leave that question hanging. That's a cliffhanger.
That's a fine tease. Will it buy cigarettes?
All right. Speaking of buying cigarettes, no, I'm just kidding. The first thing.
Oh, I thought we were going to go into a Kings conversation with Vlade Divac. All right, carry on. I'm done derailing.
All right, so let's start with Rookie of the Year. Obviously, I think we're all going to have the same guy potentially as the Rookie of the Year. I have Zion Williams as the Rookie of the Year. What do you guys have?
I'm in the same camp, man. I have Zion, and the reason is he's the most dynamic college player that we've had in a long time. I had an NBA scout tell me, and forewarning, you might have to bleep this, but this is his exact quote, that Zion Williamson is Draymond Green with a rocket shoved up his ass. And I thought that was the best way to describe him that I have ever heard. And so, yes, he is the guy for me.
So I don't know if you guys read at all. Did you see the article on The Ringer? I don't know if it came out yesterday or when it came out, but it basically talked about Zion's preseason from a historical standpoint. And they're only going back to like 2005, 2006, because that's when they have whatever these advanced stats and things from the preseason. But basically, he's had the best preseason of any rookie basically in history. And even going back beyond that, talks about guys who averaged 20 points a game and shot 70% from the field. So Wilt came close during his season in 66-67, averaged 24 a game, shot 68% from the field.
Dwight Howard the year before he led, the preseason before he led the Magic to the finals, past the Cavs. He shot, he averaged 20 points a game and shot over 60%. But basically, it was just this whole list of things that nobody has ever done. And it's clearly a small sample size with four games only for Zion. But the point here is that the historical names that the four games set of statistics tracks with is like Shaq, Wilt. I mean, just the list is just, it's just unbelievable. Shooting 70% from the field. I don't think there's any doubt that if he stays healthy, that he's going to be the rookie of the year. I think the bigger question is he going to be a guy that, I mean, is he already a top 15 player in the league as a rookie? If he comes in and he's going to average 20 and 10 and shoot 70% from the field, I mean, does that change the Pelicans' ceiling? And I think we'll get to that when we start talking playoffs later. But to me, it's a no-brainer that if he's healthy, he's going to be A, the rookie of the year, and B, he's going to probably be an NBA All-Star. And the question is he already going to be in that upper echelon of guys who can impact winning? Because we haven't seen really a guy who's a rookie impact winning in a long time.
So the funny thing is I wonder about the 20 part more than anything else, is can he get to 20 points? Because he's got a bit of a shaky jumper, and he's explosive as all get out. There's nobody that's going to deny that fact. But that's why I wonder about the Draymond Green side of it, is Draymond is so good at basically controlling all aspects of the game, you know, rebounding, passing, good court vision. That's what Zion was like as well when he was at Duke, is that he could see everything. He was kind of moving a little bit of, you know, half a step ahead of everybody else. I wonder if the scoring holds up, and it's part of the reason why I continue to, like, I say Zion, but there's another part of me that wonders if we might run into the empty calories rookie of the year score winner. So like a guy like Ja Morant, who puts up 25 points or something like that on a bad Memphis team, winning this award because the voters turn around and look at it and go, oh, Ja Morant scored 25 points a game. You know, the Michael Carter Williams rule, where it's like, well, this guy scored 25 points a game, so let's just give it to him. Or you could do that. You could do Darius Garland for the same thing of like, well, here's just the empty calorie point scorer. Why not look at this guy and say, yeah, he could do it too. That's only thing that holds Zion back.
Yeah, I think that could definitely be a factor. I mean, historically, that has happened in the rookie of the year race, where guys who maybe are not or don't end up having the same career as somebody else win the award simply because they get more opportunities to score. And I think the Pelicans are going to be, regardless of where Zion falls on that continuum that I was talking about before, he's going to make them better, and they're going to be a better team than typically what one of these number one draft picks gets a chance to go to. So you wonder, just, you know, he's not going to have the same amount of just free reign because his team's going to be better.
Right.
But I will say the one thing that he has going for him in this whole race is he's going to be a walking video clip, for lack of a better way of saying it. I mean, he's going to have so many highlights that are going to be YouTube, that are going to be out there for people to see, that I think the lack of, if he has a lack of stats compared to one or two other guys, it's not going to matter because he's going to have such explosive highlights.
Well, not only that.
Those are going to be the things that people remember. He's just going to have so many ridiculous highlights.
Not only that, the fact that he's going to be on way more national TV games. I mean, think of it this way. I don't think the Memphis Grizzlies have a lot of national televised games this year.
Oh, come on.
I don't.
You know Jaren Jackson Jr. is making everybody come.
Oh, no.
All the kids are jumping to watch Jonas Valanciunas try to throw jump hooks at the hoop.
Come on. I just don't think it's happening. So I think that's definitely a positive for Zion, too, is because, if I remember correctly, they have like the third or fourth most like nationally televised games. Like,
yeah, I could see that.
I'm assuming because of him, obviously. You know,
right, for
and
sure.
It starts right off the gate. They play Toronto, like the first game of the season, right? They're in Toronto.
Yes.
So you got to, and that's obviously the ring ceremony for all the important players that were on that Toronto Raptors roster, except probably the most important player on that Toronto Raptors roster. But anyways, I digress. I think Zion's definitely the clear cut winner. And I have. If Zion quote unquote gets hurt, I have Morant winning it. over anyone else because of what Dan said. I think he's going to have a lot of great stats on a terrible team, you know, as you called it, the empty calorie MVP.
I mean, R.J. Barrett's another one that's in that conversation. I can see him putting up 20 to 25 points a night on a team that nobody wants to watch.
Oh, Mike, do you want to entertain that conversation?
So, okay, so here's what's funny about that is I started looking at, okay, because I wanted to put together kind of a top five list, so maybe my first team all rookie. And so one of the things that I did was I listened to each of the people that we had on our preview pod from each of the cities and kind of got a feel for, because – you know, we can look at
insider
guys' college
info.
Reputation. Well, yeah. I mean,
I like this.
Well, so we could look at what these guys did in college. We could look at the slot that they were drafted in. And, yeah, that gives us some idea, but we're not in these cities. So, I mean, I'm not following all these rookies and checking every single box score to know where guys are. So I kind of tried to take into account if somebody mentioned a guy saying, hey, this guy really looks like, you know, he could be something. I took that to heart, but RJ Barrett, actually, I have him at number five for the reason, Dan, that you talked about, which is I think he's going to have the ball a lot in New York. I think he's going to get lots of opportunities to score and do things. And so I think he's going to be a guy who's going to put up good stats. But my concern with him, and Jay, you and I have talked about it a number of times when we've discussed RJ Barrett, I don't think that there's something about him I don't like. There's something about his game that I don't like that I don't think is going to be conducive to him being a winning player in the NBA. I just think that there's something off about him, whether it's his basketball IQ or understanding situations or whatever it is. But I do think when all is said and done this year, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think he's going to average 20, but I wouldn't be surprised if he averages in the 17 to 18 point range because he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. My guess is that the Knicks are going to marginalize Dennis Smith and Frankie Smokes, and Barrett is going to be their de facto point guard. And as a result of him just having the ball so much, I think he's going to put up stats.
Put it this way, boys, I'm going to probably listen to more JD and the Straight Shot albums this year than I will watch Knicks basketball games. I'll just say that right now.
Got to get to one of those concerts, man.
Enjoy
the James Dolan experience in
person. Oh my gosh. Hey, when he pulls out that harmonica, nothing's better.
All right. So what I was saying here, so two guys that I think have been talked about that I put on my quote, first team all rookie were guys who were drafted further down the list. So these two guys were not drafted in the top 10. So one is Alexander Walker from the Pelicans, who everybody just seems to be raving about. Both I've heard it on a national scale, people talking about him, and then the Pelicans guys talked about how good he looks and that they got to find ways to get him minutes, and the Pelicans have a deep roster, so it'll be interesting to see how his playing time, you know, figure out how much they're going to play him. Now the other guy is Matisse Thybulle from the Sixers, who came out with a defensive reputation, and when I talked to the Sixers guy, he's like, man, he goes, Thybulle is going to play. He's going to be in the rotation. He's way better offensively than the Sixers thought, and he's everything that was advertised as far as a defender. And so he may not average 18 points a game. He might only average 8. But if he's in the rotation on a Philly team that clearly is going to be one of the top two teams in the East, he's going to get some consideration, maybe not for Rookie of the Year. But I think as far as being a first-team all-rookie, that's a guy I would look at. So Thybulle and Alexander Walker, the two guys that are kind of my sleepers.
I dig, man. Those are great guys to look at. I mean, everything you read out of Philly's camp involving Thybulle is that this guy isn't afraid of anybody, and he'll D up anybody on the face of the planet. So that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, and Philly's going to be an interesting team. They're just going to be so big and long. We'll talk about them later, but they're just such a unique team because they're so just huge physically that their defense, I mean, they have the potential to be the number one defense in the league.
Yep. Dan, did you have anyone else on your rookie? I know you had mentioned before that you might have some sleepers. Is there anyone else that you – or did we already cover everyone?
You covered everybody. The only – as I said, I threw out the empty calorie guys of John Morant, RJ Barrett, and then Garland because I think Garland's going to score a boltload of points on a team that nobody's going to watch.
Oh, come on, man. We're going to watch.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope Garland – I hope he puts up a lot of empty calorie stats with the idea that he's going to be good in the future, and it's going to be interesting to watch him and see what kind of a player he is, and it'll be obviously be interesting to see how Colin Sexton progresses this year, which we'll talk about a little bit more when we get to the Cavs. All right, Jay, what's next?
All right, we're going to move into the MVP discussion. And since I went first on the Rookie of the Year, Dan, would you like to discuss who you feel is – who are your contenders and who do you think is going to win it?
All right. So the contenders I threw down here are Anthony Davis, because – you can build the case where LeBron passes the torch over to Anthony Davis and says, "All right, son, I'm just going to set you up, and you're going to go nuts here."
You don't believe that, do you, Dan?
No, not in the slightest.
Okay, thank you.
Come on.
There's no way that's happening.
No,
I keep hearing that theory espoused by people in the national scene, and I'm like, there is no possible way that LeBron is going to be deferring and setting up Anthony Davis to be the MVP. There is no possible way that's going to happen.
I'm in the same camp. I got a feeling this is going to be the LeBron James double barrel bird to the entire NBA media for no longer saying he's the best player on the planet. I can't see him taking a back seat.
But
we'll throw that one in there. LeBron is the other one I'll throw in there too. I will be pulling for Nikola Jokic to win it. He won't, but I'll be pulling for it. And my winner is Giannis. And the reason is I've watched enough of Kyle Korver trying to help him learn how to shoot. And if Kyle Korver is saying that this guy's figuring this out, watch out. Because he's going to be a monster if he's even an adequate three-point shooter. It's only going to open everything up more. I could easily see Giannis winning the MVP this year. And the other one would be Steph Curry. I just think Steph going off for 35 points and throwing up one of the insane Steph Curry seasons that we've seen before – I could easily see him doing that again on a Golden State team that's going to need every last one of those points.
Jay, go ahead.
So my winner is Steph. When I said who's going to be the MVP this season, that was the first name that came to my mind, and it's exactly for what Dan just said. I think Steph is going to average close to 40 points a game if he has his way. At least the first half of the season, he's going to have to if they're going to be in discussion for playoffs.
All right, I mean, so how high does Golden State have to finish in the standings in order for him to really get consideration? I mean, last year Harden averaged 37, didn't win it. His team was – the Rockets were second, I believe, in the West last – no, they weren't. They were third, fourth. I mean, does Curry have to get in the top half of the Western Conference playoffs?
I don't think he averages.
No?
And here's why.
Okay.
Because he doesn't have – I mean, he has Draymond, but he doesn't – and he has got Russell. But he's literally taking this team that's going to be in the situation that they're not going to have Klay Thompson till who knows when. And, you know, I think I heard on Simmons' podcast the other day they were talking about – like, oh, that people are going to think he's going to be back, you know, right after the All-Star break. And he's, like, sitting here thinking, under what kind of timeline is that? Like, he got injured, and he didn't even have the surgery until the middle of June because he had to shoot his Space Jam 2 stuff. So you can't have surgery when you got to film a movie with LeBron. Come on now. So I just don't think it reasonable to think that Klay Thompson's going to be back before the middle of March. And at that point, you know, if the Warriors are even in, you know, discussion for playoffs, I mean, Steph Curry's going to have to be scoring a lot of points. And I think if he's scoring 40 points and shooting at his ridiculous, I don't remember what it was, you know, 45, 50, 90 clip or whatever he did a few years ago, I think he's got a chance. And that's the guy I came down with. And the other two names that I have written down, I have AD written down. Obviously, I don't believe for a second that LeBron is going to let that happen, but I have AD written down because, once again, AD is not going to probably be healthy all season, so that's a question mark. And then I have Giannis as my other guy. But I for some reason, just really believe in Steph, and I think that Steph's going to win it.
All right, so I put a top five just like I did for the rookies, so I'm going to go in reverse order. So number five, I have Kawhi. There's going to be a ton of buzz because the Clippers – I think are probably the presumptive favorite, it seems like, with everybody that you talk to. A lot of the media guys that we talked to said, of all the teams, who are they afraid of to play in the playoffs? They all said the Clippers. Now, Kawhi's not going to play enough games for him to win the MVP. And I think the Clippers are going to be, I'm not sure their regular season record, where they're going to finish, because Paul George is going to miss the beginning of the season. Kawhi is going to sit out 20 games over the course of the year. So I don't know that he's going to build a case where he's going to turn the Clippers into a 65-win team and play 78 games. But he's definitely going to be in the race. He's going to be a factor. The one guy that I have on my list that you guys didn't mention was Joel Embiid, because I think that he's going to put up monster numbers this year. Philly is going to be right there at the top of the East with Milwaukee. I think that's going to be nip and tuck throughout the entire season. And Embiid seems like he's in better physical condition. As long as he stays healthy, same thing as kind of any of these guys.
I'm glad you finally joined my side of things, Mike.
Well, I look, I debated this hard, and when we talk about Philly, we can revisit the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid
discussion.
Dan, just
so you know, Mike has always been under the assumption that Ben Simmons was the driving force behind the team, but I think he's finally turncoated, and I love to hear.
Here's what I would say to that is, I know there's a stat that during that Toronto series last year of when Embiid was off the floor versus when Embiid was on the floor, it was like a 100-point swing, and the minutes clearly, obviously, he was spent a lot less time on the bench than he did in the games, and so it seemed as Embiid went, so did the Sixers. But I think for this team to be at their best, I think Simmons has to get to another level than where he's been right now. And if he does, if Simmons gets to that next level, which I don't know what that looks like for him. I don't know if that looks like him making some jump shots. I don't know if that looks like him dominating in such a way where the jump shot isn't as much of a factor. I don't know. I still think Simmons is a key for that team to be successful. But Embiid's going to put up the counting stats, and Embiid has the big personality, so that's why I threw him in here. And then the other guys, third on my list was Steph. I think he's going to have a monster season. I'm just not sure the Warriors are going to finish high enough in the West that no matter what he does, I'm not sure it's going to be enough to win the MVP, especially since he already has two of them. I don't know what the narrative is there. I guess, you know, he's carrying a lesser team, but I just don't think they're going to get high enough up in the Western Conference standings. Number two, I had LeBron. I think LeBron's poised for a monster season. I think this is, I don't want to say it's his last go-round as a potential MVP, but at some point, Father Time has got to start creeping in, and they're going to make deep playoff runs as long as him and AD are together. So he's coming off his longest offseason in forever, and he wants to prove a point. I think if you're LeBron, there's got to be some sense of relief that the Warriors aren't standing at the end of the road for you to have to go through when it's all said and done. And so I think he looks at this as a tremendous opportunity to be able to win another title, add to his legacy. So I think he's going to be on a mission. But my MVP again is Giannis, for the same reason I picked him last year. I just think that in the East, the Bucks are probably going to win close to 60 games. I think he's going to come back. Just strikes me as the type of player who the disappointment of losing last year is going to fuel this guy even more. Everything you hear about him, everything that you read about him is just that he's insanely driven to be the best that he can possibly be. He only cares about basketball. He wants to get better. He was unstoppable last year. If Kyle Korver is really helping him to develop a jump shot and he gets even a marginal jump shot, he's going to be, I mean, he's already impossible to guard. There's probably only one or two guys that can even slow him down. And if he can shoot a jump shot, then just forget about it. The rest of the league might as well pack things in. So I think Giannis is going to win it again, back-to-back. And he's going to play a lot of minutes. He's going to play a lot of games. And the Bucks are going to win. Again, I think they're going to get to 60. So I see Giannis as pulling down the hardware when it's all said and done.
All right. Well, I want to note, none of us mentions James Harden.
I was going to say, and then I'm going to throw in one fun sleeper, okay?
Yeah, give us a sleeper. Love to hear it.
Dame Lillard. And the reason I say it is the way that he played in that playoff run was unbelievable. And I could easily see him in a season where there's going to be a giant cloud hanging over it labeled load management. That guy is not getting load managed. And he's going to go off and is going to drag that team as far as he possibly can. And so the narrative is there for Damian Lillard to win it. So that's another one that kind of keep an eye on, at least to me, keep an eye on it. It'll be fun to watch because he's going to throw up a ton of points.
Yeah, Dame is – he's really, really good. I thought he was – against in that series against the Thunder, what he did to Russell Westbrook was just completely dominant. And then in the next series, though, against Denver, I didn't think he was nearly as good. And I think that's why Denver was able to, you know, stick with that series as long as they did. I think if Dame had been at his best, they would have taken care of business a little bit sooner. So it'll be interesting to see. I think that all those names we mentioned are definitely guys that can get it done under the right circumstances, and depending on how their teams finish. So we shall see how this season plays out and who ends up hosting that trophy long after the season's over when they make the announcement on the stupid NBA awards show.
Such a waste of time.
Yeah,
so much fun. I'm hoping watching the awards 2 weeks after the finals. And
I haven't watched it either year.
You could see who's gonna show off the most part of their Achilles. who's gonna be on crutches from the off-season surgery nobody knew about. Yeah. Who's wearing the loudest outfit? I can't watch that thing, man.
We didn't watch it either. We're all in the same boat.
It's sad that three people who love the NBA have no desire to watch the show.
It's one of those where they come to you and they're like, "Hey, you know, the NBA award show," and it's on. I'm like, "Yes, so is Parks and Rec on Netflix."
There you go. That's it.
Perfect. All right, so now what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and list our eight teams. Each person is going to list their eight teams from each conference. We'll start with the East because I think that's a good spot to start from. So I'll go first. I'm going to read them in order from we'll be dramatic. I'll start from the eighth seed.
Yeah, so, I like that.
So the eighth seed, I have Orlando. All right, seventh seed, I have Toronto. The sixth seed, I have the Nets. The fifth seed, I have the Celtics. The fourth seed, I have Indy. The third seed, I have the Miami Heat, because I truly believe that a trade will happen at some point. I don't know who, but I just think that the Heat are going to be the third best team in the East by the time the season's over. I have Milwaukee 2, and I have Philly 1. So those are my eight teams in the East.
All right, go ahead, Dan.
All right, so here's what I did. So I threw down question marks on the teams that I didn't totally know what to do with. And the question marks are sitting next to the Bulls, who have had a ton of hype and a ton of interesting stuff with Lauri Markkanen and what you do with Zach LaVine.
That worked out for the Browns, a ton of hype.
that's a different podcast. The other question mark I threw next to was the Hawks, who I ended up picking for the A seed. And that might be sentimental more than anything else, that I just want to see them in because they were so much fun last year. They might be the good bad team, but at least they're going to be the fun bad team. So they're 8. I threw the Pistons as 7. 6, I said the Magic. 5, the Nets. 4, the Celtics. 3, the Mojitos. 2, the 76ers. And 1 would be the Milwaukee Bucks.
So you don't have the Pacers in the playoffs.
I do not have the Pacers in the playoffs because I don't know when Victor Oladipo is coming back. I have no clue. And if they don't have Oladipo and they lost Bogdanovich, who is going to score 20 points a game on that team? And if I can't say who's going to score 20 points a game on a team, they're probably not making the playoffs.
And you don't have the Raptors. It's not going to be Malcolm Brogdon, right?
Huh?
You don't have the Raptors in the playoffs either, right?
They are the and I'm going to go the pop culture route on this. They for me are the Tobias Fünke fire sale memorial team of the 2019-2020 season. And by that I mean there is going to be a gargantuan fire sale starting in December up in Toronto where it's like, all right, come make the offer for Kyle Lowry. What do you want for Marc Gasol? What do you want for
sign a contract extension? He can't be traded.
December.
Okay.
Once December hits, he can't.
Okay.
Yeah, he's still on the block. It's the same thing with Brad Beal. Brad Beal can get traded in December. So this is, to me, that's the reason I don't have Toronto on here. Is just because I have a feeling that's going to be the fire sale team. And who knows, maybe Pascal Siakam and a half a season of wins is enough to get them in. I just really like the Hawks. I think the Hawks are going to be a blast. And so I want to reward the team that I'm going to enjoy watching.
All right, so I'm kind of in between the two of you. So my number eight was the Raptors. So I agree with you, Dan, that I don't think really that highly of Toronto's roster, despite the fact that they won a title last year. It sounds crazy, but I just don't think they're very good. But that being said, they did win a title last year. I'm not really a big fan of some of the teams that I have below them. I don't think there's anybody really, they're not really edging out any great teams in my mind. So that's why I have them at number eight. I have the Nets at seven. I have the Pacers at six. Again, probably if Oladipo was starting the season, I would have them higher. But to your point, Dan, we have no idea when or if the guy's going to come back. So you hear all kinds of varying reports. And when he does come back, now he won't have played for quite a bit. It'll be interesting to see what level he comes back at. So I think they're good enough to get into the playoffs if Oladipo misses a third of the season. You start getting beyond that, and then their case starts getting a little shaky. My problem is I'm not sure who I'd slide into a spot if I take out any of these teams. At five, I have the Magic. At four, I have the Heat. At three, I have the Celtics. At two, I have the Sixers. And at one, I have the Bucks.
So, I mean, we're pretty much in this, you know, generally in the same realm.
Yeah.
You know, at least we have the same three teams in the top four, three of the same top four teams pretty much across the board there. And
so who are the interesting teams? Who do we want to talk about that are interesting here of the teams that
I think the Heat are interesting. You got Jimmy Butler, all the reports from what I'm hearing is Deion looks really good, and he's not even like a big name player. Obviously, and Spoelstra's their coach, and I genuinely think that Spoelstra's a good coach. Even you know, he might get a little bit of flack every once in a while, but I really think the Heat have the potential to be really, really good. And obviously the East is bad, and you know, we could talk about Philly and Milwaukee, but obviously they're the one and two. No matter any way you slice it, I don't think there's anyone in their right minds that would say that they're not one and two. You could flip flop them, in my opinion. I could have easily said Milwaukee was one and Philly was two, but I think what's interesting is the matchup situation that would happen with the Heat, and I think the Heat and Milwaukee, that would be a really, really interesting playoff series. And like I said before, I think the Heat are going to make a move at some point during the season, because I don't see Pat Riley sitting on his hands not doing it if he thinks that there's a chance that this team could win the East.
See, this to me, this is the Kyle Lowry trade destination. To me, this just screams stuff for Kyle Lowry. And I don't mind Goran Dragic. I think he's a nice player. But right now, as an expiring contract, he's more valuable to a team as that than he is as a nice player for the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler is in a spot right now where everybody is like Jimmy Butler. They want to work and they want to win. And that's all they want to do. And that's how the Heat operate. They want to work out. They want to get guys bigger, better, and stronger. They want to make the most out of what they have on that roster. And that's the same way Jimmy Butler is wired. This is a match made in heaven. And so you bring in Kyle Lowry at the trade deadline. Now all of a sudden you have a guy who's better playing off the ball than he is actually playing on the ball. And this Heat team starts to make more sense. I like Justice Winslow. And between him, between Bam Adebayo, and all the Tyler Hero buzz, take with that whatever you see fit, there is enough guys that are on this roster that I can see how this works. And Pat Riley is not going to sit on his hands and just say, all right, this is my team, take it easy. That's never been Pat Riley's MO. They will make a move, and I got a feeling it's Kyle Lowry, and it's why I have them sitting in the three seed.
Yeah, I think it. You know, all of us have them in the top, you know, the top four. I had them at four. I still think the Celtics ceiling is a little bit higher. Now, they may not get to it, but the Heat definitely – to me, the Spoelstra Pat Riley combination, and I think Dan, you hit it on the head there with just the culture that they've established fits with the mentality of Jimmy Butler and what he's been all about and what he has claimed to have had issues with in other organizations. He's certainly not going to be able to make the same claim that he made going out of Chicago and going out of Minnesota, that you know, just that he doesn't have guys who want to win and the culture isn't all about that, because we know in Miami that's what it is all about. So I think that team is poised that if something were to go wrong with the Sixers or the Bucks, there's an injury, I think Miami's going to be right there in the mix to be able to challenge those teams. Now, I don't think if both the Bucks and Philly are healthy, I don't think Miami has enough to get past either one of those two teams, but they definitely are going to be feisty this year for sure.
All right, so is there any other teams you guys want to highlight and talk about?
I think the Magic need to be talked about as well.
I agree.
And the reason is they were the fun story of last year. You know, they, especially in the playoffs and that stuff, they were kind of fun. And we all looked at them and said, oh, look at this, you know, plucky little team coming out of nowhere to really push it after we've made fun of them for years for having such horrible drafts. And now here they are. How much Vucevic stock do you guys have? And are you believers in Markelle Fultz? Those are the two questions that I have.
I'll let Mike handle the.
All right, so I'll answer both of those. I'll start with the one that's less interesting to me, which is Vucevic. And I think if you look back at last year's regular season, I know that Jay and I did a podcast prior to the All-Star game, picking our All-Stars, and I picked Vucevic to be an Eastern Conference All-Star, which he ultimately ended up becoming. And he had a great year last year. I mean, you look at his regular season, you look at the stats that he put up and the things that he did in the regular season, and clearly those statistics and what he contributed to their season last year during the regular season are why they ended up re-signing him as a free agent this summer and why they felt like they had to bring him back. But then you go conversely and you look at his performance in the playoffs, and he was borderline useless. And you look across the landscape of the league, a guy who is a center like him, it's very, very difficult in a playoff series where teams have time to game plan and figure out how we're going to attack this guy and do whatever and take away what he does well. It's just tough to be a back-to-the-basket center. And although Vucevic can step out on the floor and he can shoot it a little bit and he's a pretty good passer, I just think that when it push comes to shove in the playoffs, I'm not sure how valuable a guy at his position is. So in the regular season, he's going to help him win more games. There's no question. He's a good player. I don't know if he helps you win in the playoffs. So that's my take on Vucevic. The Markelle Fultz thing, I really like Markelle Fultz. I know that what he has, you can claim that it's a physical debilitation or whatever with his shoulder and whatever the diagnosis was, the phantom shoulder muscle or whatever the actual medical term is, but he has the yips and that's clear. But you watch and you see him play and you see some of the things that he could do out on the floor, and it's obvious why he was the number one overall pick in the draft. His body, I mean, he's just long and lean and quick, and he can do things with the ball, both off the dribble. He's a good passer. I think he can be a plus defender once he figures out how he can go about doing that and really understands NBA defenses. And Steve Clifford is known as a good defensive mind and a defensive-minded coach, so I think he'll be able to get that out of him. The question will become, can he, and not even can he become a great shooter or a good shooter, the question is, can he develop and play where he can be aggressive and not be afraid to get fouled and have to go to the free throw line and show off, again, the problems that he's having mentally with being able to shoot the ball. When you're in the flow of a game, you can kind of distract yourself and not have that affect you that much. But if in the back of his head, he's always thinking, oh, if I drive here, I'm going to get fouled, and then I got to go to the line, or, man, I got to get rid of the ball here because somebody's going to foul me. And that's something that I don't know where he is on that. I don't know how well he's going to be able to overcome that. I'm sure that he's hired his own personal sports psychologist. I'm sure Orlando has a bunch of people working with him. I just know he's a tantalizing talent. If I was the Cavs or any other team, I would have tried to pry him away from Philly. The fact that Orlando did it, I just think that his upside, what he could potentially bring to this team, especially if he could somehow end up being the starting point guard by the end of the year with this team. And then you look at the other athletes that they can throw out on the floor, and you look at the type of teams that Steve Clifford has put together. I just think Orlando has – I think they're the team that has the biggest variance for me, in that I think their ceiling is really, really high. And I also think that their floor is really, really low, because they have a lot of guys that could go either way. I'm still not sure what Jonathan Isaac is. I have no idea what Mo Bamba is. Markelle Fultz could end up performing like a guy who was a number one overall pick. He could also be out of the league in 2 years. I have no idea what to expect. So they're a very, very interesting team.
Yeah, I agree. I think my big thing for Orlando is, like you said, I think they could, you know, they could be the four seed, theoretically. I think the guy, when I talked to the Heat guy, Mike, he was really big on Orlando. He thinks Orlando's going to have a huge season, and that it's going to be an interesting kind of Orlando Magic Miami Heat rivalry situation brewing. But I couldn't rationalize putting them up any higher than eight, and I don't know. I couldn't put them ahead of Toronto. And I just felt like the Nets were better. And like I said, they could be the four seed. Who knows? But right now, I just put them in the eight. I'm definitely intrigued to see if the Fultz thing works out. I think I'm being cautious, because who knows what the Fultz is going to work out. But if it does work out, like you said, I think they could be really good and dangerous.
I'm intrigued. That's the only way I could say it. With Fultz, I think he's a hell of a lottery ticket, as both of you gentlemen have said before. What this team comes down to is, if there is any eggs in the Markelle Fultz basket, they are making a giant mistake. You need to look at him as a lotto ticket, and if he pops, good on you, and if he doesn't, then you gotta move on and find something else. To me, this is the season that Aaron Gordon needs to figure it out. He's got to figure out if he's going to be Sean Marion, or if he's going to continue to think he's a more established version of Sean Marion with a three-point shot and that stuff. Because if he comes to the realization that, like, hey, I can jump out of the gym, I can hit the corner three, I can rebound like hell, I can play great defense, then this team will be really good. And this team has a ton of talent. If he continues to think he can consistently shoot threes, then I don't know how far they're going to go. He could derail this entire team. So I think that's the other side of it, too, with Orlando.
Yep. All right, I think it's time to move on to the Western Conference. Mike, do you want to go first in the Western Conference?
Oh, by the way, leap candidate, Caris LeVert. Just wanted to throw that out, too. All right.
Yeah, the Nets are interesting. The Nets are very interesting, because I think it all depends on how does Kyrie fit in with what they're trying to do. And I think Kenny Atkinson's a good coach, and I think they'll figure it out. I'm just not sure where they're gonna go, where they're gonna end up. So again, I had them down at number seven, but they're gonna be fun to watch too, because there's just all across the league, all these teams are so different that it's made for. I think this is gonna be the most interesting NBA season in a while. Where, again, Golden State's not gonna be sitting there at the end waiting for all this other stuff to just kind of come out in the wash, and it's not gonna matter because they're gonna win it if they're healthy.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
All right, Western Conference.
Conference, Mike.
Done derailing, sorry.
No, it's all good. So, Western Conference, this one, when I sat down to start doing this, I literally had to write down all 15 teams, because as I started putting together my list, I'm like, I got through it the first time and I'm like, oh, I forgot this team. Oh, I forgot that team. And now I got to figure out, okay, if I'm putting this team in, who am I bumping out? And so I actually did, I bumped out two teams that were in the playoffs last year and bumped in two new teams. And part of it is just my own personal preference. I think one of them, are going to be surprised, the team that I bumped out. So
you did not bump out Houston.
No, I did not bump out Houston. Okay. It was tempting. No, I did not bump out Houston. So my number 8 seed in the West is the Sacramento Kings. My number 7 team in the Western Conference is the New Orleans Pelicans. My number 6 is the Golden State Warriors. Number 5, the Houston Rockets. Number 4, the Denver Nuggets. Number 3, the Utah Jazz. Number 2, the LA Clippers. Number 1, the LA Lakers. So that means I bumped out the Spurs and the Trailblazers. So we can talk about that in a little bit. So I'll let you guys share yours, and then
Dan, go ahead. You can go next.
All right. So I threw so I did the same thing. I wrote down all the teams. I threw question marks next to 4 different teams that are in here that I was eyeballing. I ended up going this route. In the 8th seed, I put the Kings, and I think that's mostly because, again, I just want to reward fun teams. 7, I put the Spurs because I will not go against Greg Popovich. I will not go against the establishment. I've been burnt too many times. It is my overarching rule. I will not bump out the Spurs. 6 is the Warriors. 5 is the Clippers because I believe in load management. 4 is the Utah Jazz. 3 is the Lakers. 2 is the Nuggets. And 1 is the Rockets.
All right. Well, we have one that's the same across the board. I'm impressed. So here's my 8. I have the Spurs at 8. Much like Dan says, I just can't. I'll be honest. I had one that neither of you mentioned at the 8 seed a few days ago. I had the Mavericks. I think they're interesting.
They got a question mark next to them on my sheet.
I think the Mavericks are interesting. If breaks happen their right way, I think they can be a playoff team. I really do. But I don't have them there now. I have them 9. So I have the Spurs 8. I have Portland 7. I have the Warriors 6. That's the one that we all 3 had matched up. I have the Lakers at 5. I have Utah at 4. I have the Rockets at 3. I have Denver at 2. And I have the Clippers at 1. And even though they have load management and even though Paul George isn't going to play, I just think that the Clippers are going to be really good. And I think that they're going to be the number 1 seed. I don't think there's any team in the West that gets to 60 wins. I don't know that there's a team in the West that gets to 56, quite frankly. I think 55 is the ceiling in the West, and I just think that's because the teams are going to beat each other up. So that's where I'm going, and that's why I went with that. That's what
I agree with you on that the win totals. I think Philly and Milwaukee both have a decent shot at winning 60. I don't think anybody, as you said, in the West, I'll be surprised if anybody cracks 55. I think it's going to be tough for a number of reasons. First of all, just the difficulty of the schedule in the West. And then two, I just think because they're all new teams, I think some of these teams are going to kind of scuffle out of the gate and trying to figure out what they are and get guys back from injury and whatever. So
I think if there's a team in the West that could eclipse that, it's got to be Denver because they're just the most consistent. Nothing's changed. Like, they added a few small pieces and maybe they lost. Oh, man, they lost Isaiah Thomas. That was a huge loss for them, I know. But I don't think that – I think Denver has the best chance to have the highest win total. They have the highest – in my opinion, the highest ceiling because of the fact, as far as win totals go, because they are so – nothing's really changed with that roster.
Right. I mean, of the playoff teams that I had, so the Nuggets and the Kings are probably the two teams that have the most consistency. They have the most continuity coming back, whereas all these other teams are basically brand new, at least in terms of the top end of their
roster.
The Spurs
didn't change very much. I know you don't have the Spurs in the playoffs, but the Spurs didn't change much either.
The Spurs, if anything, got better because you bring back DeJounte Murray, who, by all accounts, last year they were thinking he was about ready to ascend to a star turn. So you bring back DeJounte Murray to a playoff team.
Hey.
I just couldn't. I wanted to get these other teams in. It wasn't necessarily me thinking, oh, the Spurs are going to completely fall off the map. I think Dan said it best. I kind of wanted to reward teams that I thought would be fun and that I'd want to watch.
Hey,
and I don't really want to watch Spurs basketball.
Did you see DeJounte Murray shut down James Harden the other day? Like three straight possessions.
Like, I did not see that, but
It was beautiful. You would have really liked it, Mike. You should check it out on Twitter.
But was it during the playoffs?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Because that's usually when that happens. So you know, during the regular season, Harden's usually fine. It's just in the playoffs where sometimes things. Well,
maybe Harden confused playoffs and preseason because they both started with the letter P.
That could be. That could very well be.
It's the reason why I have the Rockets with the most overall wins. Now, mind you, I'm not going to watch them do it because I can't stand watching the Rockets. I just think,
come on, you don't want to watch Russell Westbrook just running down the floor and chucking the ball off the backboard, and then James Harden rolling his eyes at him,
and then taking a boatload of step back threes and then getting fouled and going to the foul line and having games that take 3 hours. I can't. I'm not going to watch much of the Rockets this year. I'll probably check them out like once every month or something like that and go, oh yeah, they're still playing the same exact way. Oh look, they're still racking up wins and points. Good for them. But I don't want to watch it. It's the reason why I think they'll probably win the most games in the entire conference. It's just, I know exactly what they're going to do. They do it really well. And they're going to shoot a boatload of threes. They're going to shoot a boatload of layups. They're going to shoot a boatload of free throws. And they're going to play average to slightly above average defense. And if they continue to do that, then they're going to win a boatload of games. And I will watch very little of them because watching them hurts my eyeballs.
I don't know what to make of Houston. I mean, I think you add Westbrook to that mix and – I can see it. I can see what's going to happen, just like you're saying, Dan. I can see what it's going to look like. I'm just not sure that the ceiling, those two guys, if they really want to reach their potential, if they're going to win that many games in the regular season in order to get to the number one seed, and if they truly want to have any success in the playoffs, both of those guys are going to have to sacrifice and do things that they haven't shown a propensity to do at any other point in their career, which is play off the ball, be active, not just stand and wait for their turn to get the ball back so they can do stuff. And both of them are going to have to make at least a semi-commitment to defense because clearly they're both going to be out there on the floor in crunch time. And that's the one thing you could say about Chris Paul. He may have declined slightly as a defender, but he certainly is better than either one of these two guys. And when you have both of them out on the floor, you're asking a lot of those other three guys to be able to cover for the deficiencies that both Russ and Harden have shown in their career to this point. And I think if they're going to get to their ceiling, whether that's their regular season ceiling or certainly their playoff ceiling, they're going to have to figure out, A, how to play off the ball when the other one has it, and then, B, they're going to have to defend a little bit. And if they don't, their postseason isn't going to last very long.
Oh, yeah, and I'm stepping on my playoff preview and that stuff. Trust me, they're not going far. They're going to win a boatload of games and they'll probably lose in the first or second round. But they're going to win a boatload of games, probably the second round. But they're going to win a ton of games in the regular season.
All right, so I took the Lakers as the number one seed, and I had a really hard time trying to decide which of these teams would be the number one seed. And really, I couldn't bring myself to include the Rockets in that group, but I looked at the Clippers, the Jazz, and the Nuggets as being the other three teams that potentially could have been the number one seed. And I stared really, really hard at the Nuggets for the reason, Jason, that you talked about a minute ago with the continuity. And I ended up putting them at number four simply because I don't think they're as great as Jokic is. I don't think Jamal Murray is the greatest second banana on a team that is going to be at the top of a loaded Western Conference. I couldn't buy that. And so that's why I slid the Nuggets down to number four. But I looked at them really hard with the idea that maybe the continuity, especially early in the season, maybe they get off to a 16-4 start or something like that, and they're just able to kind of maintain that lead, and that would keep them up at the top. But ultimately, I picked the Lakers simply because, and I mentioned it earlier, I just think this is going to be a tour de force for LeBron. And I think all this sandbagging of, oh, Anthony Davis, we're going to get him the MVP – That's BS. Hey, it's not going to happen.
Got to get publicity for Space Jam 2 going too. So, yeah. You know.
LeBron is going to be, he's just going to be on a mission. I don't see him, even if you load manage him, he's going to play 75 games. And yeah, Davis may get hurt, but I just think LeBron is going to be on such a mission this year that I don't know. I think they're going to finish at the top. The Clippers, I think the load management bumps them down. That's why I had them at number two. The Jazz, I had them at number two in the West last year. I got them at number three this year. I like what they've done with their team. I think they're going to be a really tough out when the playoffs come because they're still going to be really good defensively, and their offense is going to be much improved. They have a lot of different ways now that they can attack you. They got guys that can score, whereas before it was just kind of like, okay, the shot clock's down to six. Let's give it to Donovan Mitchell and see if he can create something while the rest of us just stand around. Well, that offense hopefully will be gone with the upgrades and talent that they've added with Conley and Bogdanovich. I think they're going to be a really tough out. The top end of this Western Conference is just, it's just ridiculous. I mean, the top six teams, let's say, if we include all the way down to the Warriors, I mean, do you really want to, if you're the third seed, do you really want to see the Warriors and Steph and possibly Klay coming back in the first round?
That's why I put Houston at three, because I want to see Houston versus the Warriors, because I want to see the Warriors kick their
ass. Can I throw out one nerdy Jazz question real quick?
Yes.
I'm hooked on the Jazz this year. I'm going to watch a ton of the Jazz. And because I think Quinn Snyder is a genius in that stuff. My one question is that I want to find out with the Jazz is, can Mike Conley play 75 games? And if the answer to that is yes, then this Jazz team, the ceiling is really, really high. If we find out that they have been really in the grit and grind mentality, hasn't been quite there with him where it's like, he's got a rolled ankle, take 2 weeks. You know, if that ended up being the truth and that Mike Conley can actually play 75 games in a season, then I'm in hook, line, and sinker. If we find out that in reality he is banged up constantly, this could head south in a hurry. I think Mike Conley is a serious linchpin for this team, and I love Conley, like on the defensive end and on the offensive end. I know he's taking half a step back on defense, but if he's there, man, this team is going to be a lot of fun. Please stay healthy. Please, basketball gods, let him stay healthy.
Yeah, Utah is going to be fun. They have a lot of interesting pieces, and like I said, I think they're going to be good. They have the potential to be good both offensively, which hasn't always been the case, and defensively, they're going to lose a little bit. Bogdanovich isn't necessarily a great defender. Mitchell himself's not that great of a defender, but ultimately when you have Rudy Gobert standing in the paint, when all is said and done, that's enough probably to give you a top five defense no matter what the rest of those guys look like. So I'm really excited to watch Utah. I've liked them for the last couple of years. I like them even more this year. It's such that top of the West, whatever happens, and we don't really know because all these teams are so new that we don't have a sense of exactly how it's all going to look and what the rotations are going to be and how the pieces are going to fit together. But you start looking at that first and second round matchups in the Western Conference come next April when the playoffs roll around. And it gets interesting really, really fast for a lot of these teams where they could end up with a 50 to 55 win season and get bounced in the first round.
It's not going to happen, but a man can dream. Please, please, please. Andre Iguodala to the Utah Jazz. Okay.
That would be interesting.
That'd be phenomenal.
I think he's a Laker, by the way. I think he's a Laker.
I think he's a Clipper.
Mike?
Well, the Houston Rockets guy told me that Houston really wants him and that Houston always gets in on these buyout guys. Now, he didn't think necessarily that he would get him, that Houston would get him, but he's like, if you put Andre Iguodala on this roster, he felt like that would be the piece that could potentially push them over the top as a title contender. I would say if, when push comes to shove, I think he ends up a Laker. That's what I'm talking about. It would break my heart. I just think he's going to read the landscape, and if what I'm thinking is true and the Lakers end up at the top of the conference, why wouldn't you join the top team? Why wouldn't you join LeBron and go and see if you can't get another title? The Clippers are going to be right there. I mean,
and then he can win that. Then he can win the MVP in the finals again.
Let's hope not.
Come to Utah. Zion National Park is gorgeous. Bryce Canyon, you can hike all over the place. Come to Utah.
Utah, he would look very good.
He won't go there because no NBA player on the face of the planet has been like, you know where I want to spend my afternoons? Utah.
Yeah, it has not been a free agent destination. Let's just put it mildly. No. All right, so the back end of the West. Let's talk back end of the West. Dan, you and I both had the Kings in. Talk about why. What's the case for the Kings other than the fact that they're fun to watch and they're young?
I think Buddy Hield had an underrated phenomenal season last year that nobody talked about enough. And De'Aaron Fox is just a beast. And I think he's only going to get better over time. I like Marvin Bagley. I want to see if it all pulls together with Bagley.
Do you think this Buddy Hield nonsense that he had to like address yesterday is going to do anything but create toxicity in the locker room?
Well, see, I worried about that when I saw that today, and I didn't. Did that come out yesterday?
Oh, it might have been today. Well, technically,
I think I saw it today, like, where he said, "We better get this sorted out, or I'm going to look elsewhere."
Like that concerns me.
Yeah, that concerned me too when I saw that. I'm like, that doesn't sound too good. Now, again, they might sign him and it might all be a moot point. But, yeah, when you start saying that kind of thing, that's not good. That's not good for team
chemistry.
Especially
when you're – I mean, I'm not – Buddy Hield, you're a nice player and you're a good player, but you're Buddy Hield. You're not like – you're not Paul George. You're not Kawhi. You're not, you know, these other guys that, you know, yeah, you're a good play piece and a nice player, but you're nowhere near their level yet. So you better slow your roll, dude. Like, that's just my opinion.
I think the Fox-Hield backcourt is first of all, it's fun. It's just fun to watch. But I also think it's very, very good. You look at what Fox does well, pushing the ball up the floor, being able to penetrate. His shot is still a work in progress, but he's a great passer by all accounts. He's sort of the de facto team leader, and he's kind of taken over that leadership role in Sacramento. And then Buddy Hield had, as you said, Dan, a historically great shooting season last year. I mean, he shot like 42.5% or something like that.
Well done. 42.7 off the top of your head. That's well done.
All right. So I was reading that article, it talked about some of the statistics on like almost like 8 3 attempts a game. I mean, that's ridiculous. And, you know, and then as you said, Dan, you got Bagley, they re-signed Harrison Barnes, who you can
Harry Giles is an interesting player.
Right, for sure. There's just a lot of things there that are fun. They've got the other Bogdanovich, who had a really great World Cup, and, you know, they think that he's going to really step up and be, not that he wasn't a key contributor last year, but that he can really maybe add a dimension because he's more confident. He's got another year in the league. They really think he's going to step up this year. So I think they're going to make the playoffs. Like I said, I bumped out the Spurs and the Blazers. The Blazers, to me, and you mentioned it off the top, Dan, when we were talking MVP, I think Dame is just phenomenal. CJ McCollum is phenomenal. I just don't know if I start looking up and down at these other teams. Whiteside, to me, adds nothing unless you get 5 years ago Hassan Whiteside, and even then I just think centers – the value of a center who plays like Hassan Whiteside in today's game is very, very minimal. And, you know, not that Harkless and Aminu were great, but those two guys are out the door. I don't know. I'm not feeling the Blazers this year. The Spurs, we talked about it. You know, you guys are betting on the cult of Popovich. I think at some point that's got to go away. I'm not a big fan of the games of either DeRozan or LaMarcus Aldridge necessarily. They kind of play the mid-range game, which last year got him into the playoffs. I think at some point that carpet gets pulled out from under him.
I will say the one thing that's worried me about the Spurs is, I don't know if you saw the video of Tim Duncan doing wind sprints with the team. Did you see that, Mike?
I did not see that.
He was beating people on there on the team.
Doesn't shock me in the slightest. They will be the slowest team in the league.
That concerned me. That was the only thing that gave me pause. Excuse me.
They're going to lead the league in 22-footers. And they are going to, or 20-footers, I should say. They're lead the league in 20-footers and half-court offense.
Hey,
and they will be the seventh seed
in the
playoffs.
I know a guy that fits that kind of offense that's available. Carmelo, baby.
Oh, did you read that Baxter Holmes piece?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right, anyway, before we get derailed any further.
Okay. All right, so here's my last comment on the Spurs. the way I looked at it too is, you know, Popovich just finished seventh in the World Cup, so maybe the mojo is ending and it'll just carry right on over to the Spurs season. So that's why I had the Spurs. That's why I had the Spurs out. So,
I can see it. It wouldn't shock me. I'm just not getting burnt for not picking Pop anymore.
Got it. Totally understand. All right, are we ready to go to the conference finals?
Yeah, so do we start with the East?
Do we want to do any Pelican talk? Or have we covered most of our Pelican talk?
Well, we should definitely talk Pelicans. I had them in the playoffs. Neither one of you guys did. You want me to lay out the case for why I think they will?
I would love to hear it because I want to put them in.
Okay, so just to me, it comes down to a couple things. One, they've built a roster of guys that if Zion is as good as it looks like he's going to be, they've built a roster of guys that makes sense around him. Jrue Holiday is really, really good. And in years when he's been healthy, he's going to put up big numbers. He's really good defensively. I think they have a lot of other pieces that make sense around Zion. I think J.J. Redick makes sense around him. Signing him was a quality move by David Griffin. Not only are they set up, though, for this season, they have all this just boatload of draft picks and things that they can use. Who knows? If they get to season, not that they're necessarily going to mortgage the future just to try to get the sixth seed in the playoffs or the seventh seed in the playoffs or creep into the playoffs this year, but they have such a stockpile of assets that they're going to have the ability, whether it's this year or in the years to come, to be able to add pieces to their team. And I think it comes down to me that I think Zion is a transcendent NBA player. I just think his skill set, the things that he can do, the one stat that, you know I talked about that article from The Ringer a little bit earlier, but another stat that was in there was that in four games, he made 32 baskets in the restricted area. So that's 8 baskets a game inside the restricted area. In the history of the league, since they've been keeping track of that stuff, nobody has approached that. The only guy who's come close to that number is Shaq. And you think about how dominant peak Shaq was in the key, and you're talking Zion is in there. And again, small sample size, but everything that we've seen from his college days to what he's done in the preseason indicates that he's not just going to be your average rookie. It indicates that he's going to be a guy who, as I said right off the top of the podcast, is going to impact winning. And so as a result of that, I think they have a good team around him, and I think he's going to be a top 20 player in the league very, very, very quickly. And if that ends up being the case, I think they make the playoffs.
I'm with you. I want to put them in. I really do. I want them to make it. I want them to knock the Spurs out. I want them to knock another team out. I just wonder, with how loaded the West is, if we're all going to be saying, man, I wish the Pelicans were in the East, because if they were, they'd be the 5 seed. Like, I think that's where they're going to sit. I want to see what Brandon Ingram does. I want to see if Lonzo Ball can continue to evolve. He's another guy who restructured his jump shot. Let's see if it drops. It'll be interesting. Josh Hart's a really nice player as well. They are sitting on so many picks that I don't even think they know what to do with it. I mean, they'll make Boston envious with the amount of assets that they have in the draft chest. So I'm really intrigued. I'm going to watch a lot of Pelicans games. I want to put them in. I will not bet against Popovich. I'm sorry. I just won't do it.
It's
I've been burnt too many times.
The track record says that that's going to happen. Go ahead, Jim.
Right.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was at. I just couldn't take the Spurs out and put the Pelicans in because I have the Pelicans and the Mavs in the 9-10 spots. I think both those teams, you know, if Porzingis looks healthy and plays healthily, and he had a really good game tonight, I'm sure you guys didn't see the stat line, but he played in the first half and played pretty darn good, probably the best he's looked in the preseason. And if he continues to get to look at least 90% of what he was before he hurt himself, I think the Mavericks are definitely an interesting team, and I think the Pelicans are definitely interesting too.
All right, so can we agree? Let's do it this way. Let's reverse engineer this. Can we agree on the teams that have no chance at making the Western Conference playoffs? The Suns, do we all agree? No chance.
Yes.
The Memphis Grizzlies?
Yes.
the Minnesota Timberwolves. Is there any way that Karl Anthony Towns can somehow magically put this team on his back and get them into the eighth seed? I say no.
Oh, there's a way that it happens. The question is can he do it for 82 games? And that answer is no, because there are times you flip over to Karl Anthony Towns and you're like, holy mackerel, this dude's unbelievable. And then you'll flip over the next light and he'll be loafing up and down the floor and getting burnt by Hassan Whiteside. So could it happen? Sure. Will it happen? No. It's a lot of Andrew Wiggins. It's a lot.
Did you see his I just saw the headline. I didn't dive into the article at all, but it said something. The headline said Wiggins laughs, or Wiggins says there isn't 100 players better than him in the NBA. So he must have been ranked below player 100 in the ESPN player rankings.
It must have been something like that.
Yeah, so I got a kick out of that headline. And then the last team I think that we could probably agree on is not going to be a playoff team is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I don't see that happening. Nope.
So that leaves us with, let's say we have five spots at the end of the playoffs. We have five teams for two spots.
Yep.
Spurs, Kings, Mavs, Blazers, and Pelicans are the five teams that we all think in some shape or fashion are going to be battling for those last two spots in the West.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
It is. I think that back end of the West is going to be fun, and obviously the top end is going to be a lot of fun to see who ends up there. And there's going to be a lot of fun matchups in that Western Conference first round, that's always my favorite round of the playoffs, because there's four games in a night, and you get to see teams maybe that you don't necessarily watch all year. I love the first round of the NBA playoffs. It's probably my favorite 5 weeks of the year, however long it takes them to get through that whole first round.
Yeah, so I will say this, Mike. I will say I think the East is a little bit intriguing too, the back end of the East, because I think really after the top two, maybe top three teams, depending on where you fall, I think the rest of the East is just eh. And, I mean, obviously there's teams that are bad in the East, but I think that there is really the 4 to 10 seeds. You could make a case for any of those teams to be up to number four and any of those teams to be out of the playoffs.
There's a lot of teams in the East I don't want to watch. I don't want to watch any Indiana Pacers basketball. I could care less. I don't want to watch the Toronto Raptors. I could care less. I'd much rather watch, Dan, you mentioned the Hawks. Like, I'd much rather this year watch the Hawks than watch the Pacers. I'd much rather watch the Bulls than watch the Raptors. So some of these Eastern Conference playoff teams, I'm just like, eh, I don't really care all that much about what they're going to do. Whereas in the West, I think all these teams are a lot more interesting, and the upside of some of those teams in the West is much higher than these teams that we were talking about in the Eastern Conference. So,
and that's leaving out the fact that, boys, I am not going to watch 1 minute of Charlotte Hornet basketball. I'm sorry. I can't watch any Nick Batum this year. I'm sorry to the Charlotte fans. We love you. It's a great city.
You know, I think Scary Terry is going to represent a totally different name this year.
It's a great city, but nothing in me is like, you know what sounds like fun tonight? Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Cody Zeller.
No, thank you.
I'm out.
No, thank you. All right, conference finals, fellas.
All right, so let's start with the East.
I got to believe that we all are in lockstep on this one. Bucks-Sixers.
Oh, boy.
What?
Philly Heat.
You. Oh, my God. Prime 112 is coming to the podcast. We're going to South Beach, kids.
All right, hey.
Hey, listen, I truly believe, I think what's going to happen is that the Heat are going to get the 3 seed. They're going to roll in. They're going to get the 3 seed. They're going to smoke whoever's the 6 seed. And Milwaukee will probably smoke whoever's the 7 seed. And this is my theory. If I have Philly 1 and I have Milwaukee 2, this is how it shakes out. And then Milwaukee's going to play the Heat. And I just think that whatever that addition is, whether it's Lowry or, I don't know, maybe this guy from Cleveland. If the Heat can make that happen, I think they can match up and beat Milwaukee. So I'm that's why I went with the Heat. I don't know.
Boy, you got a lot of Brandon Knight stock.
Ooh, man, I don't see that happen. I don't see Giannis letting that happen, especially not after what happened last year. I just think that guy is going to be on a mission to kill it, and I don't see anybody I definitely don't see the Heat beating them. We could talk Philly and Milwaukee here in a second, but man, I don't see Miami being able to get past Milwaukee. But stranger things have happened, I guess. The case for Milwaukee is just the fact that Giannis is going to be probably the best player in the league again this year, at least through the regular season, and the rest of Milwaukee's supporting cast, although they lost Brogdon, you know, everybody else is back. We all have question marks about Eric Bledsoe, and so I'm sure do all the people in Milwaukee. And the sad part with Bledsoe is that you're not going to know. It's not going to matter. His regular season is irrelevant basically this year because they're still going to have in the back of your mind, what is this guy going to do for us in the playoffs? But I don't think Miami has enough. I don't think they have enough to be able to be able to combat what Giannis is going to bring to the table. So, but we'll see.
It'd be fun if it happened. I'm in the same camp. It'd be a lot of fun if Miami made it. But yeah, I think we're looking at Bucks Sixers.
All right, Western Conference.
Go ahead, Dan. You can go first in this one.
I have Jazz Clippers. Give me all your Utah Jazz stock. Let's go.
All right. Look, that's fair. I love the Jazz. I did not have them going that far. I have Lakers Clippers.
I stared at that for a while, but right. You know what? Let's be different.
We all three have different things. I have Clippers Warriors.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Warriors. All right, make the case.
They play Houston. If my seedings. We're going by my seedings. Play Houston in the first round of the playoffs.
It's a winnable series.
They then play, and by the way, this is assuming Klay Thompson is back and playing, okay?
Right.
Play the winner between the Utah Jazz and the Los Angeles Lakers. And I just would love to see the Lakers play the Warriors. I would love to see the Jazz play the Warriors, and I still think there's a lot of bad blood between the Warriors and LeBron. And I think the Warriors would step up their game, and I think the Warriors beat them. And I'm going.
That would be a fun series. That would be a blast.
That
would rank very high on series that I would like to see.
That's by the way, it's not even in a Western Conference final series. That's a Western Conference semifinal series, and that would be a heck of a series to watch. And that's why I'm going Clippers Warriors. It's based on where I had them seated and how I thought the matchups worked out from there. So that's what I'm going with, Clippers Warriors.
I would love it. I'd love to see it, buddy. I really would. It'd be a blast.
I mean, and isn't it weird though? Because wouldn't you think that we'd be so sick of the Warriors at this point?
No, I love watching the Warriors.
I think I'm genuinely going to enjoy watching them play basketball again this year. I really do. I think I am, and and that's a really strange thing for a Cleveland Cavaliers fan to say, I think, but. I'm really looking forward to it, and I think it would be intriguing to see the Clippers and the Warriors match up in the finals. So that's what I'm going
with. Well, we're hoops nerds, man. I mean, it makes total sense. We watch the Warriors, and everybody watches them and goes, oh, yeah, it's four superstars. Look at this. We watch the Warriors and get excited for off-the-ball motion. We get excited for pin-down screens. We get excited for stuff that normal people look at and go, ho-hum, whatever. They just score all the time. And play really good defense because they're stacked. And we're like, no, it's their system too. Like Steve Kerr runs his beautiful sets all over the place. And he's got, you know, the triangle from Phil. And he's got the pop motion. And he's taking stuff over here. And he's slamming it all together. And it's just beautiful thing. I think that's why we all want to see the Warriors play again. That's why we all like watching the Warriors, whether we want to admit it for being a Cavs fan or whether you want to admit it because you're tired of watching them win. You love watching them play because as a nerd, it's awesome. It's gorgeous basketball. When Naismith put the peach baskets on the walls of the YMCA, he envisioned the Golden State Warriors. And that's what you see. And it's gorgeous basketball.
It's so true, Dan. I've said this. I think I've told this story on the podcast. Maybe I haven't. But before the Warriors became the Warriors, I went to a game where the Cavs played the Warriors. And I remember sitting in the stands and watching Curry play. It's the first time I had ever seen him play live. And when you're in the arena compared to watching him on TV, you get to see more of that, what you described, Dan, the off-ball movement and some of the things that are going on that when you're watching it from the TV angle, you don't get to see. And I remember after that calling up my dad and just talking to him about just – you know, having been at the game and talking about Curry and just saying, this guy, I think he might be my favorite player in the league because of the way that he moves off the ball and just he's constantly in motion and his footwork and the way he handles it and just all the things that he could do. And then clearly over the next 5 years, he wasn't my favorite player, but not because of the way he played in terms of his basketball styling, just because he became a foil for the Cavs. And so now, even last year, you know, I found myself strangely rooting for the Warriors to beat Toronto, who I really didn't enjoy watching play. And I've never been a fan of Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard. I could take him or leave him. But the Warriors, for whatever reason, despite the animosity that built up over the course of our 4 years final, you know, appearances against them, I really found myself rooting for them. And part of it is, as you said, Dan, it's just they play basketball the way that basketball is meant to be played. And if you were going to play on a team, you'd want to play on a team that plays the way they do, because they do things correctly, despite some of the jawing and the antics of Draymond and Steph that get us annoyed as Cavs fans. The basketball itself, as you said, is beautiful. And I think if we could, I would love to see that Warriors. I'd love to see a Warriors-Lakers series. That would be a lot of fun based on the history of LeBron and the Warriors and just the whole thing. And I think it would be that would be quite a spectacle if that happens.
Right, I'm in. So sold. Let's go.
Let's talk about your guys' Western Conference series now.
So I have Lakers Clippers. I go back to, I still think it's a LeBron tour de force, and I think that this is the year that he just puts it into high gear for the last time, and he gets them to the conference finals, and they match up with the crosstown rivals, the Clippers. The Clippers have a great roster. Obviously, in the playoffs, there's going to be no more load management. If Paul George is healthy, if Kawhi is healthy, their roster is deep. It's talented. They're going to be just a menace defensively. You start talking about throwing Paul George, throwing Kawhi, throwing Patrick Beverley out there to guard against other teams' perimeter players. They're going to be a bear to play in the playoffs. I think the one thing that they may struggle with a little bit is being able to guard an opposing team's big man. So if you look at, okay, maybe they match up with Denver, and that could be a tough matchup with Jokic. If you look at them playing against the Lakers and having to guard Anthony Davis, does Paul George or Kawhi, how do they deal with AD? I think that's the one weakness that I see on their roster right now, because Montrezl Harrell is kind of undersized. Tough guy, good defender, but maybe not as big as he might need to be to deal with somebody like Jokic or somebody like Anthony Davis. So I think the Clippers are going to get there to the Western Conference Finals. I think the Lakers are going to get to the Western Conference Finals, and it becomes a crosstown Western Conference Finals.
Do you think they still have 500 days to do the Western Conference Finals if they don't even have to move cities?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it certainly cuts down on the travel expenses. You don't have to worry about going back to the old 2-3-2 format to cut down on travel and that, yep, if that's the case. So,
all right, Dan, your Western Conference final matchup.
All right, I geeked out on the Jazz already earlier, so just rewind the podcast and listen to that part of it. The Clippers, they're the deepest roster in the league, and I think depth will play a role into this, because A, it's always, you know, good to have it in an incredibly long season when you're doing all that stuff, and B, it's great because you can make trades with it. And I think the Clippers still have something up their sleeves. I don't think, with the talent that's on that roster and the guys who are there and the buyout market and everything else, I think they can still make an impact while having the deepest roster in the league. When you have, what is the most valuable thing in the NBA right now? Guys who are between the height of 6'5 and 6'10 that can guard multiple positions and can spread the floor. Well, they've got two of the five guys in the league who fit that mold. And so with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So if you're holding that to begin with, you're at an advantage. So plus we all trashed Doc the GM. He was rancid. He was a horrible GM. Doc the coach knows what the hell he's doing. And if this hasn't invigorated him, then I give up. So I think the Clippers easily find their way there. I have the Clippers beating the Jazz as well. Spoiler alert, making its way into the final. I just want the Jazz in there. I think it'd be an absolute blast to watch them. I love their roster. I love Bojan Bogdanović adding to that roster. I think there's a move to be made with them as well. And I think the talent is there, and Quinn Snyder's a great coach and deserves to have people go, oh, wow, who is this guy for the Jazz? Wow, he actually is pretty talented, besides the NBA nerds. So, yep, that's what I'm sitting on.
All right, so what's your guys' finals?
Dan, you already gave one, so why don't you give who you have in the East?
Clippers, Philly.
Mike?
Whew, man. I debated back and forth between the Bucks and the Sixers. I love what the Sixers have. I love the fact that I think they're going to be just gigantic and they're going to be super tough to score on. I just don't know that I'm ready to hitch my wagon to the slightly crazy and occasionally sick, injured Joel Embiid. I'm not sure that this is the year that Simmons takes that leap that we talked about earlier, where he's able to confidently shoot his jumper and become more of an offensive factor in the playoffs. I think they're good enough and the East is weak enough that they're going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. But I just think Giannis is going to be on a mission. So I have the Bucks advancing over the Sixers, and then I have the Lakers advancing over the Clippers. So I have a Bucks-Lakers NBA Finals.
Well, I'm with Dan. I have Clippers-Philly. I just think there's one person we haven't mentioned for the 76ers, and I'm not a huge fan of him, but Al Horford, oh boy. Putting him with Embiid, putting him with Simmons, their length is just going to be – I just don't know. I really think that Philly's got a good chance this year, and I think they take out Milwaukee. Or take out
the 76ers crunch time five, just to put this in perspective. Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, Joel Embiid. The shortest guy on the floor is Josh Richardson at 6'5". They're going to be a monster on defense. Just an absolute monster. Good luck scoring points.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I keep looking at Philly. I keep looking at them. Something is holding me back. I like both of these teams. I will definitely be rooting for both the Bucks and the Sixers throughout the season. They both have players that I like watching. I love watching Giannis. I love watching Ben Simmons. I love Embiid when he's on the floor and when he's doing the things that he should be doing. I'm just Philly, for lack of a better term, I think they're the flakier team. And I think that's what makes a difference, and that's why I had the Bucks advancing past the Sixers. But I will not be surprised at all if the representative is Philly as well. But I'm going to ride with the Bucks.
Okay.
I'm in. It'd be an absolute blast.
All right. Champions.
All right. I'll start. Go ahead. I have the Bucks over the Lakers. So I have the Bucks getting it done. Giannis triumphing over LeBron. I think by the end of the season, LeBron's going to have carried a huge load. I just think that the Lakers roster, if it can carry him through the Western Conference, I think that at some point it peters out and Giannis is going to be good enough and it's going to start a run where he's going to re-sign in Milwaukee and they're going to build that team around him for the next few years. And I think we're looking at the beginning of, I don't know about a Bucks dynasty necessarily, but I think we're looking at multiple years here in the future where the Milwaukee Bucks are going to be in the title conversation for the next 5, 6, 7 years, while Giannis plays out the rest of this contract and his next one.
As a dude who is from Milwaukee, who is watching his extended family realize that they actually have a basketball team and they're kind of sort of paying attention to it, that would be phenomenal. It'd be absolutely phenomenal.
All right, Dan, who do you have winning it all?
I have the Clippers winning it all. I got the Clippers winning the title. I look at that roster. I look at the talent that's on there. I look at what it could be as well. And I know Philly is a monster and what they have and all that stuff. But if I got Paul George and I've got Kawhi Leonard and I'm doing a draft of the guys that are available in this series, if 1 and 2 play for the LA Clippers, well, then that's the answer to that question. Give me the two best guys and give me the fact that they have enough of a good supporting cast that they will be able to conquer anything that Philly will throw at them. Give me the Clippers.
This is good, guys, because I have Philly.
So
we right on. All have
all right, we got people. three different titles.
I like to think Philly. I think Philly over the Clippers in seven games. I think it's going to be a brawl them out, old fashioned, defensive slugfest, and I'm dying to watch it. Because, I mean, both those teams are going to be strong defensive teams. And good luck scoring, like Dan said, on that lineup. And likewise, for the Clippers, you've got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. You know, you could potentially see a game like Game 7 of the NBA Finals of the Cavs and the Warriors, except the fact that we don't go through it's not four-minute stretches of terrible basketball, of terrible shots and turnovers. It's going to be just great defense causing these things, not like what was happening where people were missing wide open shots and, you know, things like that. But I think I'm picking Philly, I just think I've been a huge Embiid is the driving force, and he just looks like a different kind of chiseled monster this year, and I think he's going to help carry that team. And obviously Simmons is going to take that leap. Counterpoint to you, Mike. I just think if he can truly, and this is hypothetical, if he can truly find a shot, then he and make it at some kind of consistent pace.
He becomes a top five player in the league instantaneously.
Exactly. I think that's the thing that, you know, I know he made one in a preseason game against a team that's not even in the NBA. I get it. But if he can even just force the issue and be stand and spread the floor a little bit, that opens things up for all the other guys, and that's why I picked the 76ers.
Well, I think our picks symbolize what this NBA season is all about, which is a little bit of uncertainty for the first time in a long time, and I also think it speaks to the fact that there's multiple contenders that have a legitimate shot at competing for an NBA title. I think both the Bucks and the Sixers from the East clearly could win the title this year. And then out West, I think, I don't know if I'd necessarily include the Warriors as, for me, at least personally, I don't know that they can win the title. I think they could certainly beat another team that I would consider to be a title favorite, but I don't know that the Warriors can get through four rounds of the playoffs and win it with the team they have. But I think I would say then the other four teams, the Lakers, Clippers, Jazz, and Nuggets, are all legitimate NBA title contenders. So for me, I have six teams that I think legitimately can win it, and I think that's way more than we would have had we done this particular exercise in any of the last four or five seasons for sure. NBA fans, we have a wide open NBA title race this season. Come next June, I think there's, as we said, a bunch of teams that are going to have an opportunity to win a title. It's going to be a great season. Looking forward to watching it and seeing how it all plays out. I want to say thanks to Dan for jumping on with us, and to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.